your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Hi everyone, welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan, or
Elf will not be seen tonight.
And neither will the movie that I intended for us to watch. We'll get to it later. I had to come up with a last minute replacement because we decided on one movie and then YouTube flipped its the movies you can watch free with ads around, and I was like, oh man, I was so excited for that. But instead, we have for you something that I think it got made in the same way that we chose it, which is somebody looked around and was like, this is the opportunity. This is the time to make it. Home Alone has gotten kids into excited, has gotten people excited for mischievous kids setting traps. And Grumpy Old Men has gotten people excited for Walter Matthau. Let's make a Dennis the Menace movie.
Yeah, so this is a movie from 1993, which was, so it's kind of from that hot minute when they made a lot of movies based on kind of boomer nostalgia for like 60s sitcoms and cartoons. This is when we got like, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies and Car 54, Where Are You? And the Addams Family. Mm-hmm. And some of those... Yeah. Oh yeah, Coneheads. Yep, Leave It to Beaver. Yeah. So you know, some of those have gone on to be classics, and some have not. So
no.
But this is squarely in that milieu, I think you can say.
However, I think it has less to do with the original, with the Dennis the Menace TV series, and more to do with the comic strip.
Yeah, I've never seen the TV series, so I really can't say much about it. But yeah, it does feel like they went back to the original, or it feels very true to the comic strip, at least.
Yeah. The TV series used to run all the time on Nickelodeon. You know, it was one of those things where you could tell that they had bought it intending to put it on Nick at Night. And you're like, okay, this has some kind of kid appeal. Let's put it on in the daytime, too. But... I was never a big fan, honestly. A thing I thought was really interesting about Dennis the Menace was how the actor who played Mr. Wilson died while they were doing the show, and then they had someone else move in claiming to be his brother, and then they never mentioned the other Mr. Wilson again.
Oh my God, they did the Beer Fest thing, but for real. Well, I mean, I guess he was technically a Mr. Wilson. So yes. did they give him a first name, or was it always just Mr. Wilson?
Yeah. The first one that's in the comic strip is George Wilson, whereas this one was John Wilson. Very creative parents.
My question is in the Dennis the Menace series. So Mrs. Wilson, is it still the same Mrs. Wilson? Did she just marry the brother when the first brother died?
No, the other Mrs. Wilson, I think she appeared like during the, like to hand off the keys when she and George were, you know, taking a trip abroad or whatever. And then John Wilson brought his own wife. You know, it would have been funnier if they'd kept the same wife.
I mean, it would really be funny. I mean, it'd be like, you know, it's the way things are done back in, what, the 50s.
Yeah.
You die, you inherit the wife.
No, it'd be even funnier if it was just like, yeah, well, Mr. Wilson used to live here, but we had a key party and I got his house. So.
It would be in keeping with the time.
Yeah.
Now, so the movie Dennis the Menace that we're looking at now... you mentioned it's very Home Alone. It's obviously it's kind of, it came out the year after Home Alone, so they were really kind of leaning into that. I think John Hughes, the famous murderer, was also involved in this one, as he was from Home Alone. And
John Hughes, the famous murderer?
Yeah, isn't he the guy that like killed a bunch of people on the set of the Twilight Zone movie?
No, that wasn't him. That was what's his name? The one who has a horrible son who also makes movies now.
Yeah, that's him. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. John Landis. That's John Landis, isn't it?
Yes. No.
Not, never mind. Apologies to John Hughes. Yeah. Yes. John Hughes, whom, as far as I know, has not killed anyone. So
no.
Yeah, sorry about that. I mean,
he made a couple of, you know, like racist and homophobic jokes in his movies in the 80s, but you know, as you said, I think you said on Twitter that you know, how to know if your movie has transphobic jokes? Is it from the 80s? Then it does.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be expected. People forget how intensely racist and homophobic and transphobic the 80s was. I mean, I should say, because it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's funny. It's funny, you know. It's just that's how it was a different time, you know. I guess it's the best thing you can say about it.
The Ego Trip Big Book of Racism specifically calls out a scene in Weird Science where one of the main characters starts doing this really embarrassing black person impression, and
oh my God, yeah, I remember that. That was,
yeah, they said, you know, an awful lot of black kids were left knowing the truth. Hughes don't love them Hughes.
There was a big thing I remember in kind of 80s coming of age movies, like teen movies. There'd be a scene where, for whatever reason, the main characters, you know, who come from the rich lily white suburbs, have to go like across the tracks to the bad part of town and impress some black people. Like, you know, to prove that they're
Adventures
cool.
Adventures in Babysitting. Yes.
Yeah. That's another one that does that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's like a thing, because I remember a lot of movies, it was this idea that like, okay, if they can go and be accepted as cool by the black people, it shows like, I don't know what it shows, but I guess
best it was a thing. I think it was their way of justifying not having any black people in the main cast.
Yeah, most likely. But yeah, it was definitely, you know, that it was a time that was kind of how you would see black people in movies, is you would go to the black part of town and prove that you were cool by, I remember like, License to Drive did it too. I remember that.
I've never seen License to Drive. That's the one with both. That's the one that made the Coreys a star, right?
That's right. It has both Coreys, not one Corey, but two Coreys. But it's definitely a thing I've seen in multiple movies. And of course, like, other than that, if you're Asian in an 80s movie, you know, you got Long Duk Dong. That's pretty much how all Asians were portrayed. And if you're Middle Eastern, you know, you're from Karbamistan, you know, so
yeah. You know, how embarrassing is it that the same guy who played Long Duk Dong also played Cooney in UHF, and that was a better role?
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. In the 80s, that's pretty much a sort of, and you're Asian and an actor, that's kind of the role you're almost like, you know, stuck with, those sorts of things.
You know what's weird is there was, you remember the My Pet Monster cartoon?
I remember it existed.
Yeah, it existed, and one thing that was unusual about it was that the main character, you know, the two kids that knew about the pet monster was the one who kept the pet and his best friend who was Asian, and he wasn't like, you know, I think he wasn't even written as Asian. They just gave him the character model and were like, that's good enough.
So he was Asian, but not stereotypically Asian? Is that what I'm hearing? Huh.
Yeah.
You know, this is interesting, I guess. Maybe, you know, maybe we can file this under the 80s was a land of contrasts. But I was thinking, like, you know, because cartoons in the 80s felt like they were actually kind of making an effort to be less racist. Not a lot of it wasn't very done very well, but you generally have like, okay, there's a gang of kids, you know, and we're going to have a black kid and we're going to have a Latino kid. We're going to have a nice rainbow coalition, you know. And I think almost
G.I. Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Think of G.I. Joe. Think of Dinosaucers. Yeah. I'm sure Transformers probably. And, oh, sorry, Captain Planet. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
and, crap, what was that other, what was the one I was thinking of? Never mind, go on.
Oh, Brave Star, of course, is a big one.
Yeah. Of course, that was the future, but yeah, it still counts.
Yeah. But, you know, having a Native American lead is pretty impressive. So, you know, the 80s, it felt like the cartoons are making these efforts at, like, look, we're building a future to teach kids that racism is wrong and, like, you know, we can all get together and don't stereotype. But all the media for adults was like, racism is fun. It's so funny. Oh, we're all having a great time with this racism. So it's just, you know, it's an interesting time.
Somebody must have reasoned, well, the kids didn't vote for Reagan.
Yeah. Or maybe they just feel like, look, the adults are a lost cause. There's no way we can train them not to be racist. But this new generation, maybe.
You know, that generation is screwed up already. All we can do is take their money. So we have
to
reach for the lowest common denominator and make, you know, the cruelest possible jokes. And maybe we can start over with Generation Y.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the thing, is like all those 80s cartoons, it seems like they were working until recently when it turns out that Gen X is like now what, the most racist generation of all. I guess as soon as they turned the cartoons off, they forgot all those important lessons they learned.
Boy, no. Yeah, no wonder people say that cartoons are for kids. Everything else, you know, cartoons are the one thing that doesn't give you racist messages, or at least not on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, even today, I feel like the cartoons are like this like thing where they're like, okay, everyone, we're going to learn, watch some She-Ra and get some important lessons about like gender diversity. And then it's like, oh, what are all the adult shows? I don't know what the adult shows are right now. Oh, Young Sheldon. That probably makes people extremely racist, I bet. Cause it's by that guy, isn't it? The guy who makes all the racist sitcoms.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you his name, but.
Well, I'll say it probably makes you ableist. It makes you hate autistic people, because Sheldon's so annoying.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of autistic people who feel seen when they watch Sheldon, so, you know, I just don't watch it with them.
Well, really? Well, you know what? I guess I shouldn't throw stones. It was funny. We just watched Poor Things, you know, that new movie that came out. It's actually really good. I really enjoyed it. You might enjoy it too. It's extremely weird. So
that's good. You know, that's
feel like
job one with me.
Yeah, I feel like you might appreciate this level of weirdness. But it was funny because I'm watching it, and it's about like this. It's about a person.
It's like a piano or something, right?
Not quite. It's very strange. It's basically spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen the movie. Though this, I don't know how much of a spoiler this is. It's kind of a Frankenstein story, and there's like a girl Frankenstein, and she goes on a world cruise with this guy who's kind of trying to teach her how to be like a human. And I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is like, you know, because so my wife was
lady?
Like. Yeah, it's kind of like that. Igor? My wife was all like, oh, she is so autism-coded. This is going to cause discourse. And it was just funny because watching it, I was like, this couple just is like us. This is us. 90% of our interactions are like this couple arguing. So, and I say that with love.
Thinking of the times that you've been on the podcast with your wife, I'm just imagining, you know, the scientists, you know, nudging the monster and being like, do you love Halloween? Do you believe that it's Grinch night?
It's actually there's a lot of that's big energy for what this movie's like, so
okay, now I have to see it.
yeah I think y'all enjoy it, but anyway, but so yeah, the 80s, Dennis the Menace. So then we're getting into the 90s now, and Dennis the Menace is it's reminding the boomers of the comic strips and the movies that they loved as kids. John Hughes is here, of the Home Alone guy. Interestingly, he apparently originally wanted to get Patrick Reed Johnson to direct this movie because of his Space Invaders.
Oh, that's interesting, because Space Invaders is it's different, I'll say that much.
It is, I will say this, Space Invaders is one of my favorite movies as a kid, and I still enjoy it when I see it now. I think it's actually, like, way funnier than people give it credit for. But, unfortunately, he had creative differences, so instead they got some other guy called Nick Castle. And I would have really liked to see how this movie might have been different if the Space Invaders guy did it, because as it is, this movie is, to me, not particularly funny.
No.
It's not – it's weird because I was watching it and I was thinking, like, you know, like I feel like this is not a movie that I particularly like. It's not a movie that I would seek out in any way. But it does feel like it's better than it has any right to be.
Yeah, you know? I felt that way too. I mean, it is a more than competent movie. Every aspect of it is done well. It's just that, was it worth doing?
Yeah, I feel like probably the reason it works as well as it does is probably entirely due to Walter Matthau in this.
Exactly sentiments. But Walter Matthau, yeah, he was having a moment after doing Grumpy Old Men with Jack Lemmon, and, you know, that was where I first heard of him. You know, I didn't realize that originally Homer Simpson was an impression of Walter Matthau.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you watch the, like watch the original Tracy Ullman shorts, and you'll hear Homer sounding just like Walter Matthau. I'm like, what is mind? No matter. What is matter? Never mind.
Oh my god, you're right. I never even noticed that. What an odd thing to base Homer Simpson on.
Yeah, well, I guess the voice alone, you know, there's lots of people who have, say, the, the Peter Lorre voice, who don't actually look like Peter Lorre, so.
That is true. I wouldn't have thought of Walter Matthau as being particularly notable as a voice. I mean, he does have one, but, like, yes. You know, I always thought of him more notable.
If you heard his voice, apropos of nothing, like, can you name this actor? And it was, you know, Walter Matthau saying, you're a rotten little kid and I never liked you. You know, you'd know who it was.
Yeah. I could probably pick him out. So, but yeah, so he plays, they have him in this for George Wilson, which is probably, I'd say, Mr. Wilson is the most, the MVP of the Dennis universe.
Yes.
I mean, he is...
He's kind of the main character, to the point where, you know how the other Dennis the Menace is mm-hmm. in this United... In Life of These United States, we call it Dennis and Nasher. Whereas our version of Dennis, when he visits the UK, it's just called Dennis! Sometimes with a exclamation point. You know, it should be called Dennis and Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because if you've read the comic strip, you already know Mr. Wilson is Dennis's neighbor. Dennis is always driving him crazy, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it's them,
which is not to say, which this movie goes out of the way to say, that Mr. Wilson necessarily dislikes Dennis. It's just that he's a lot, and you know,
yes.
We all have a friend who's a lot. I mean,
I mean,
Mike gets to meet his friend who's a lot every week.
Oh, who's that?
Oh, you'll find out.
I think, like, this movie, like, I will say, like, props to Walter Matthau, who I think really understood this character. And also the script does a good job, I think, of kind of getting at Mr. Wilson too, because he, you know, it would have been very easy for a script writer or an actor who to play him as a grump, which, yes. I mean, he's, you know, he's curmudgeonly, but they really do point out that, you know, he's just, yeah, Dennis is a lot. I feel like, yeah, so Walter Matthau really does all the heavy lifting in this movie. Mm-hmm. The kid who plays Dennis?
Yeah, Mason Gamble. He's retired now, and good for him.
Yeah. He's he apparently beat out 20,000 other kids for this role.
Man.
And I don't think he's bad. He's just, he's a kid, you know?
No. I mean, he's a very small child, and, you know, it's, You know, if he's the one that beat out all the others for Dennis, then, you know, what were they looking for Dennis? Because,
yeah, I mean, I feel like the main issue with this movie is there are parts that are pretty good, and I feel like especially the parts where Mr. Wilson and Dennis interact, like when they're just talking, it kind of works. Like, you know, but then they'll always like have to, now we have to have some slapstick, you know, we have to,
yeah.
And, you know, and I'm sure the kids like that, but, my thing with slapstick is just kind of like, well, it's not particularly funny 'cause it's all staged. It's fake, you know? Like,
I think a little goes a long way, especially, you know, if you have a movie that's solid slapstick, then, you know, you get inured to it so fast. Slapstick works the best if it feels, if you can make it feel like that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yes. I mean, I think that's the thing is, like, when you watch, like, for example, Steve Martin, who's kind of a master of that form, like, he'll do it like once or twice in a movie where he suddenly like trips over a sofa or something. Mm-hmm. And you get this impression that that was like an actual pratfall, an actual like mistake they just left in, you know? This instead, you know, they're doing the Home Alone thing. And I mean, I liked Home Alone when I saw it, but I was also a small child.
Yeah,
so
I saw it twice in the theaters. It was a big deal if you were a kid at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just happened so much that we got inured to it.
Yeah.
To the point where they were advertising other movies as, like, you know, the way you would advertise a Home Alone movie, even if that had nothing to do with it. Like, The Borrowers.
Oh, that's not about, like, what is The Borrowers
about? Trick play. Yeah, The Borrowers is... Oh, no, wait, no. No, not The Borrowers. No, the other one. The other one. What's it called?
Oh, the Loners?
What? Not the Littles. No, it's the one about the girls who fooled everyone into thinking that they'd taken photos of themselves with fairies.
Oh, wasn't it called Fairy Tale?
Fairy Tale, A True Story. That was it, yeah. And that one was like, what if you had a secret friend? Imagine the tricks you could play on grown-ups. I mean, they did play a trick on grown-ups, but not actually with the help of fairies.
Now, I haven't seen that movie. Do they act like the fairies? Are the fairies real in the movie?
It's kind of like a heightened reality where they try to blur the line, but they're kind of fake. It makes it pretty clear they were faking those pictures, but then it suggests they have real pictures with the fairies that they didn't show anybody.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I guess they, you know... I mean, that's the thing, is, like, people want that sort of thing. If they didn't make a whole movie about, like, kids fooled everyone because they're because adults are dumb, people would be like, well, I don't like this, you know? I do like,
though, like that... it's about me.
I do like that Arthur Conan Doyle is like, this proves fairies are real? It's like, okay, good for you, most logical man in the world.
I mean, most logical man in the world. This is how you know that the person is not the character.
That's true. I mean,
Bill
to
Watterson
be fair,
is not the real Calvin.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I guess it's like photography was new, so I can't really, like, you know, rag on him too much for not figuring out that you can fake stuff with it. You know, like nowadays we're all getting faked by, like, you know, AI constantly, even though like, you know, guys all have like eight arms in it. So it's like, you know, I mean, if you look at it, the fairy pictures were like at least more realistic looking than most of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, why were we talking about that?
Oh, slapstick. You know?
Oh, yeah, slapstick.
I can give you one example of slapstick that really works in this movie because it is I cannot imagine it having been in the script. It is at about like 2 minutes and 26 seconds into the movie. As Dennis is pedaling his way through the neighborhood, making noise and terrifying Mr. Wilson with his oncoming approach, you see two cats run into the shot from opposite directions, crash and hit each other, and run away. I'm like, did they mean
that
to happen?
That.
Did they throw cats at each other? Or not? Because it really feels like... That doesn't seem like something that you could script.
Yeah, I feel like it would be very difficult to get cats to do that on command. So that may have been an accident. Which
yeah, that was probably like, oh, we got to keep that in the movie. And yes, I'm just going to obsess over these cats this whole movie. It's going to be like you and the squashed orange.
Yeah. Oh, classic. Yeah. Other than that bit, like the slapstick in this, again, it's Home Alone type stuff, and it basically means like, okay, there's going to be a series of incredibly convoluted, absurd coincidences that will end with someone getting hit in the balls. And it's like, okay, but I mean, again, if I was a kid, I'd probably think that was funny. But like, as an adult, I'm like, yeah, okay, I see where this is going. And it requires so many things to happen to get to something that like, to get to a punchline that honestly I'm like, oh yeah, someone got injured. Well, I did not see that coming. Oh wait, yes I did. That's everything. and I feel like that really gets in the way of this movie because there are scenes where, like I said, when Mr. Wilson and Dennis are talking together, like there's a scene later in the movie where Mr. Wilson is he's putting coins in a safe because it's suddenly established he has some coins
the movie. Yeah, I think I missed that part. I was like, where did Mr. Wilson get pirate gold?
Yeah, it just comes out of nowhere that he has, it's like, all right, I'll buy it. He's an old man. He's likes coin collecting. Apparently they're valuable. Sure. Yeah. It feels like something that should be established earlier in the movie, but it just comes out of nowhere. And while he's looking at them, Dennis is basically peppering him with questions as a small child would. And, it's a really kind of a nice scene because it shows how annoying Dennis is in a way that a child actually is annoying. Mm-hmm. And also kind of this, the way that Dennis feels towards Mr. Wilson, that he's got kind of this, he kind of does look up to Mr. Wilson, you know,
Mr. Wilson is the closest thing he has to a big brother.
Yeah. And, and I really thought that was that was a pretty good scene. And, like, I won't say that Mason Gamble is, like, a great actor, but I was like, he's – when you give him something to do, he's not too bad. He's okay. You know, he can kind of – he's no – he doesn't have the charisma of, like, a young Natalie Wood or anything. But
yeah, so as a child – what did they say, like 20,000 kids, 200,000 kids? To find Mason Gamble, and they only look through 1,000 girls to find Firuza Balk for Return to Oz.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's the thing, is like kids, acting is hard, especially for kids, and most kid actors are just not very good. It's rare to find one who is, got it. Firuza Balk is definitely one that she could carry a movie. Yeah.
She's carried movies since then. She never got out of Hollywood. Yeah. I mean,
that's true.
She's kind of an understated, as far as comic timing goes, and she's got some like good kind of rubber face reactions.
Yeah, yeah. She's definitely got the presence, and even as an adult actress, it carries over. There are other actors that like the other child actors who might not be particularly good, but they've got some sort of like charm or like, cuteness to them that kind of like Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
Kind of had something there.
We got Haley Joel Osment, Macaulay Culkin, because he was all over the place. But then the Little Rascals movie came out and you're like, oh, wow, Macaulay is so much better than all of them.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. So, Mason Gamble, again, not bad, but, when he has a chance to, like, act alongside, Walter Matthau and they actually get some lines together, I'd be like, oh, okay, maybe if you had more of things like this, this movie would be a little better. But instead, they decide,
nobody goes to Dennis the Menace for the quiet parts.
I think it's... It's unfortunate because I really feel like those are the best parts in this film.
There are a number of quiet parts that kind of stick with you, especially when it's the adults interacting, especially the part with that, where Alice, Dennis's mother, is at work, and she has this encounter with this, you know, for lack of a better word, frigid bitch.
Yeah. It's 1993, and they really want you to know that this, like, oh, this woman, she's bad. She doesn't even have any kids.
Yeah. Well, she specifically looks down on Alice for having kids, and...
Yeah. But I like the part where, like, she's like, oh, you, where Alice has to go on some trip for work, because, you know, and this frigid bitch is like, well, I'm not going to cover for you, because I might not have kids, but I have a life. And we're all supposed to be like, that fucking bitch, how dare she not drop everything to, like, cover for her friend? Doesn't she know that Alice has children? That makes her more important, you know? Anyway, I'm going to go and, like, post out this on my child-free live journal community. I'm so mad. So mad about these crotch droppings. Oh! But anyway, sorry. I think you were saying something. You were saying about this frigid bitch.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's... But no, there's the scene... You know, I think the bedroom scene with George and... Is his wife Martha? Is it another George and
yes.
Martha?
George and Martha.
Oh, just like the hippos. Yeah, the scene where George and Martha, they're kind of having this, you know, this serious discussion where they say, Martha says, you know, I think I would have been a good mother. And, you know, he just kind of blows her off with a wisecrack, and then he has to pull it back because he's like, you know, it was out of my hands. You know, so I guess the Wilsons were, you know, unable to have children, and they never adopted either. So I don't know.
Yeah. I thought that was actually the best part of the whole movie.
It really was. Yeah.
It was the way they never, you know,
we never really get to see any kind of, you know, major character moments from Martha, and here, and this time we got to see her, you know, kind of living her fantasy of being the mother or grandmother she always wanted to be. So,
yeah, I thought that was the way they kind of, you know, brought that up and had that play out was very actually kind of skillful, because, you know, the way that it's, you know, she's kind of mothering Dennis, and she recites that little, you know, bedtime poem to him.
Yes.
And, you know, it's very understated, but you could, but it's, you know, and also props to, you know, the actress who plays Mrs. Wilson. She doesn't have a lot to do in this movie, but when she gets her moment, she really, like, makes it work. So that was Joan Plowright as Martha Wilson. And then, yeah, like...
Where have I seen her before? I'm not sure if I could play something. It looks like she's... Oh, it looks like she's mostly a Broadway actress, but...
Yeah, I don't... She was in Last Action Hero.
Oh, yeah. Looks like she's in a lot of. What the hell? 1999. Was there? Okay, this must be a mistake here. It has her credited as a voice role for the anime Super Mario Brothers movie that I don't think ever got an English dub.
Oh, okay. That's weird. Well, she was apparently Miss Endless. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, who the hell is Miss Endless? That character is not even listed in the voice cast.
Wow.
Oh wait, there it is.
Okay, yeah. So, but yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff. Nothing that I have seen, but that doesn't, you know, mean a lot. She's been in, like, Curious George and the Spiderwick Chronicles, Moby Dick, 101 Dalmatians, et cetera, et cetera.
Looks like she really had a turn in her fortunes at the end of the 80s. You know, she had like 10 roles up until 1985. And then from 1988 to 1999, she had about 20.
Wow.
And, yeah. So, you know, people just grow into the grandma role.
I guess so. I mean, well, you know, if Dennis the Menace is any indication, she's very good at it. Because she does have... you know, the big grandma energy. She's not like overly cloying or anything. She comes across as, you know, very real. And, I think especially that scene where, you know, she feels maternal feelings with Dennis and then goes to talk to, you know, Mr. Wilson, that whole scene is very natural. I think it's like the way he blows her off and then kind of realizes, no, this is something that's actually important to her. I need to take it seriously. And then goes and apologizes and, you know, tells her that, like, I really liked the bit where he said something like, you can't fire the fatherly feelings in me because there aren't any, but that doesn't mean that I don't feel, you know, but all my love is for you or something to that effect. Yeah. And I was like, that's actually like really, really sweet. Yes. And I thought it was
downplay him as it's a way to demonstrate that he doesn't feel like that they're any less for not being parents, you know? And I think he's right. I think that, you know, I think that saving all of your love for your spouse is absolutely, absolutely valid.
Yeah. They have to like end that scene with like a joke. Cause it turns out that like Dennis's dog has gotten in and he's talking to the dog thinking it's Martha. Martha hears him cause she's kind of like comes in behind him. But like, I really would have preferred if they just played this scene straight, honestly.
Yes. You know? It would have been better if they had been about to kiss and then like the dog tumbled down the chimney or something.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, obviously she overheard what he was saying, and I feel like there should have been like a denouement to that scene where she expresses, you know, that she heard him or something, and they have a, I don't know, that they talk to each other. So I feel like that scene was actually like kind of short shrifted a bit, which is unfortunate because it really is a good one. And I think it's probably the crux of the whole film.
Dennis does not learn anything. Mr. Wilson does. It really is his moving.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Dennis is a weird character in this. He doesn't really have an arc. I mean, I guess he kind of does because he feels,
you know what it's like? It's like Wally. Wally doesn't have an arc, but everyone around him does. He changes them.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It's like one of those, kind of Pollyanna type films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a little triumphant kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes. The thing is, because Dennis, I feel like he's kind of hard to get a handle on, and I don't think it's the actor's fault. I think it is because the script requires, okay, so like he's not really a menace. Oh, well, he is a menace, but okay, I guess the thing is, what it is living with Dennis is like going insane, because you can't trust anything you see, like that, because it's just like Dennis will just like completely innocently cause mayhem. Like there's a scene where he's all like, "Oops, I spilled all of Mr. Wilson's nose drops. I better refill his nose drops with like mouthwash. Now I got to refill the mouthwash with like floor cleaner." Yeah. So it's like you literally just go into a room and suddenly like all your medications are mixed up, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of like going insane. I think you never know what to trust when he's around. That's the thing, is like this kind of innocently causing mayhem isn't, I don't know. It just doesn't really work.
There
for
is
Dennis?
Almost, there's like one scene. There's one scene out of this whole thing where Dennis actually does cause mischief. And that's the scene where he's playing with Mr. Wilson's dentures, you know, and that's a completely, you know, that's an innocent thing to do, but you know, he does accidentally break the dentures. So, you know, he wasn't like, I'm going to get a hammer and smash the dentures.
Yeah. Like that's the thing, is I feel like Dennis's thing is like, he's, you know, he doesn't really have much of an arc. He does, you know, look up to Mr. Wilson. And when there's that scene towards the end where Mr. Wilson finally like lets him have it, which is also great, Walter Matthau really, really like hits it home here.
Yeah, just, he just turns up the ice and just lets Dennis know in no uncertain terms that he is not welcome.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, because he doesn't like, I do like that Walter Matthau in this as Mr. Wilson, he understands that, you know, he understands, even though he can't stand Dennis because Dennis is a menace, he understands that Dennis is a child, you know, like Like, everyone keeps telling him, like, Dennis is a child. You can't be mad at him. And the thing is, it's very obvious that Mr. Wilson understands that, because he does not, you know, even though he's sarcastic and he's kind of gruff, but he does not, like, you know, he doesn't fly off the handle at Dennis at any point. And no. Even at the end, when Dennis has, you know, there's a plot line in this movie where
we'll get to
Mr. Wilson, yeah, he's, yeah, the plot, such as it is that Mr. Wilson is growing a plant, and you grow it for 40 years, and then it blooms for 10 seconds. And
that seems like a terrible way to spend your life.
Yeah, exactly. And they say this early on in the movie, and it's like, okay, I wonder what's going to happen with that. And surprise, Dennis fucks it up. And so, you know, after that, Mr. Wilson is basically says to him, like, I do not want to ever see you. You know, but like, just says it like that. And it's like, wow, if I heard that, that would be devastating, yes. Especially if I was five years old.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because Dennis is five, you know, it's impossible to ascribe any real malice to him, because he really just doesn't know, you know, what's hurtful and what's helpful. You know, he does everything in the spirit of wanting to join in and be a good citizen. And then he screws it up because he's five.
Yes. But the thing is, I feel like then, you know, the problem is like, okay, it feels like now it's time for Dennis to do some emoting. And John Hughes is like, no, we got some Home Alone hijinks for you now. And it's like, oh, okay. Anyway.
All right, John, whatever you say.
Yeah. So, this movie does not have a lot of plot, because it is, you know, it's a comedy from the early 90s. It's mostly just like, hey, do you remember your funny friends from, you know, 60s television? Do you want to see some pratfalls? So there's not a lot. I mean, there's basically like there's the flower thing is the big thing that's happening. Yeah. There's like Dennis's parents have problems at work, which require them to travel. So that's why Dennis is staying with the Wilsons later in the movie. And there is a like clubhouse that they're building, which never really goes anywhere.
I thought that the point of the clubhouse was going to be that the villain was hiding out there, but we don't really see him do it.
I was thinking that too, which also brings up our villain, because we do have a villain in this.
The credits call him Switchblade Sam, but I don't believe his name is ever spoken in the movie.
No, I did not hear it. And it is played by veteran character actor Christopher Lloyd.
Another person who was having a moment at this time.
Yes. And Christopher Lloyd is always a joy to see in any movie. He always gives 110%. I would not say this is the most rewarding role that he's ever done, but he definitely, you know, he definitely is always on, you know.
He's basically playing the same role in this movie that, what's his name? Kramer, that he played in Problem Child.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. He's basically an evil hobo, you know. he looks like Bob from Twin Peaks. He's like an evil hobo who comes into town and is going to steal stuff. And
you see him lick his lips and go, I bet they don't even lock their doors.
Yeah. I mean, again, he doesn't have a lot to do in this movie besides kind of get hit in the face. But I do like the few scenes that he gets to kind of chew the scenery, like when the cops are hassling him. Like, I thought that was a pretty good scene where they're like, you know, where basically the cop is like they're doing the rural sheriff thing where like, you know, you want to go out of town by sundown. And he's all like, the only reason I ain't moving on is because you stopped to give me the breeze. And it's like, oh, Christopher Lloyd, always a joy to see.
He's practically addictive.
This
cop is the one black person in the movie, so it's kind of funny that a black guy is telling a white guy not to let the sun set on him.
I did think that was pretty amusing. That's another thing that was very common in movies of this era, or not just movies, but like any media, where it's like, okay, if you're going to put one black character in the movie, you know, it should be a cop.
Yes. Or a judge. You see a lot of black judges in movies.
Black judges and black cops. So that's like, that's where you're, if you're going to put a token in your movie, that's where to put it. Unless it's a sci-fi movie that takes place in the future, then you can have a black president. That's how you know it's the future. But anyway, it is funny that, like, because Christopher Lloyd is like, you know, he's walking through this, like, you know, this picturesque white bread suburb. And
this town, you know, where time forgot.
Yes. And, you know, he looks like something that crawled out of a swamp. And you can tell, like, this is in the days before Next Door was a thing, because none of the moms on the playground seem to, like, even, you know, care that he's, like, skulking around in the background like a, you know, like some sort of, like, sewer creature. It's just stealing purses. I actually thought that we were going to get, like, you know, it was going to turn out like Dennis was going to get blamed for his crimes or something.
Yeah.
You know?
I was thinking that too, especially with how it was set up. The first thing he steals is Margaret's doll.
Yeah. I thought maybe what would have been a better plot, and it wouldn't have taken a whole lot to kind of do this, but to give Dennis a little more substance, like have it be like, okay, look, the parents finally sitting down say, like, Dennis, your menacing is out of control. You need to stop this. And Dennis being like, okay, I'm going to turn over a new leaf and not be such a menace. And then, of course, you know, all stuff is getting stolen. And it's like, everyone's like, of course, blame Dennis because he's a menace and he's got to prove his innocence or something.
Right. Oh, we've seen this plot before, but it's not Dennis. It's the Siamese twins.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, good old Heathcliff.
Beefcliff. And so I want to know, did we ever see the doll again? Did we, like,
no.
see it in, like, his stuff?
I don't think the doll is brought up again.
So
I
what did
think
he
was...
do with the doll? Why did he want it? Gah!
Like, I thought that was really funny. Margaret does say that it's a very valuable antique doll, so I assume I assume they had to stick that in there when they realized how weird it was that he was stealing a kid's doll.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, but it isn't really brought up again. We do get... I also thought, remember early on when we meet Margaret and Joey, Dennis's friends, and...
Margaret looks just like in the comic strip. Joey looks nothing like the comic strip.
No. I guess they had a hard time finding a kid that matched those weird Joey proportions.
Yeah, Joey is supposed to be really lanky and have, like, a mostly shaved head with a sort of dollop of hair like Charlie Brown. This kid is kind of portly, and does he wear glasses?
No, I don't think so, but he's got a Boy Scout uniform.
Lot of different outfits, but I think he seems the most menacing in the very beginning when he's just wearing the overalls. You know, it's...
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, it feels like something out of Sling Blade has gotten into Mr. Wilson's house.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that. It's like very Deliverance, very Banjo Boy, you know?
Yeah. You people bring matches for Mikey.
Yeah, that is when he is the most menacing. That opening scene is very strange to me, but also it kind of makes sense because what happens is Mr. Wilson hears Dennis coming down the block, and so he runs into his house, pretends to be asleep, and puts all these medications on his bedside table to make it look like he's sick. And then Dennis apparently breaks into his house, because Dennis is in the house, and
walks in.
Comes up.
They don't even lock the doors.
Yeah, and then Dennis, you'd think Mr. Wilson would figure out that's the first thing you want to do if you want to keep a menace out of your house. But Dennis comes in, and then, like, basically kind of decides, oh, well, Mr. Wilson needs an aspirin, so I'm going to, like, you know, tear apart the room looking for an aspirin and then shoot it into his mouth with my slingshot, all while Mr. Wilson refuses to break kayfabe and is still pretending to be asleep. And
that was what kind of sold me on the idea that, no, he doesn't really hate Dennis, because you wouldn't do this with someone that, you know, you absolutely despised. You don't play along this way with your enemies.
Yeah. I also thought it made sense, because at first I was like, why wouldn't he just tell Dennis to go away? But then I also realized, you know what? This feels like the actions of a man who is driven to distraction, who literally does not know how to make Dennis stop bothering him, you know? Because I had a roommate in college who never shut up, like, ever. He talked 24/7, just a constant stream of babble. You could ask him to shut up, you could tell him to shut up. He would not stop. You just talk constantly. And I remember at one point being like, okay, like lying in bed, pulling the covers over my head and just lying there for like 10 minutes before he figured out that like I wasn't reacting, you know? So, you know, because he wasn't a bad guy or anything. He just talked all the time. Mm. So, you know, Mr. Wilson here just being like, I'm just going to pretend to be asleep and hope that eventually he goes away. Kind of like, yeah, that's the sort of guy who's like, at a certain point, you're like, I don't know what else to do. So that kind of scans. Yeah, I also like right after that conversation that Mr. Wilson has with Dennis's dad, which I thought was another really nice moment, because it does establish not only that Mr. Wilson, you know, is driven to distraction, but, you know, he's trying to say, like, look, I'm not being unreasonable here. I don't hate kids. Don't make it seem like I hate kids or something. I just have Dennis is just being a menace, you know?
Yeah, he says multiple times that he doesn't want to be taken for a grump, so it really hurts him when his wife tells him, you're a grump.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's the thing, is throughout this movie, honestly, it's like Mr. Wilson did nothing wrong, you know? He is totally justified in all the ways he feels throughout this film, and all the ways he behaves, to be honest. I feel like, you know, it's... Again, I think it's good writing and good acting for that.
And again, better writing and better acting than this movie probably deserved.
Yeah, that's why it really kind of is unfortunate that we have to waste so much time with these terrible, pratfalls and slapstick, because, you know, it's like when Mr. Wilson, like when they have the vacuum cleaner and it's like, oh, how by it, when it sucks up a golf ball and then it just like, you know, it's like it's going to blast Mr. Wilson in the nads. And it's like, yeah, I saw this coming, but also requires so many steps to get there.
Yeah.
That it's just like, you know,
the vacuum cleaner hose bends in a completely unnatural way to the point where you're like, oh, we're setting up the, you know, Dilbert gets a rocket full of sperm up his ass joke.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just like, you know, it's not funny because, you know, it's not funny to me at least, because it takes so many steps that, like, I could not believe this ever happening in a million years. And secondly, it's still telegraphed. You know exactly what's going to happen. So, you know, it just takes away from better things that are happening in this film.
Yeah.
You know, even when Dennis and Mr. Wilson are just like in the garage and Mr. Wilson is like looking for the lanterns.
Yeah, you know? That was a great scene. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved when, you know, Dennis is looking through the old, like the old like girly mag that Mr. Wilson has there. And Mr. Wilson's like, yeah, you shouldn't be looking at that. It's like a great little moment, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, if he was, you know, if he didn't care, then he wouldn't say anything.
Yeah. So there's a lot that I wish I could recommend this movie, honestly.
Yeah.
Because there's a better movie in this movie.
Yeah. Know? There's a better movie, and it's kind of sunk in the movie, and you have to sort of eat your way through a giant number three can of beans to get it.
Yeah, that's a very good metaphor, because that does happen in the film. We get, which also leads up to, I gotta say, an extremely disappointing fart joke, because we get towards the end, Christopher Lloyd has to eat a gigantic can of beans for reasons, and farts into a campfire, which causes, you know, the fire to to, you know, flume up. And yes. It's not the, and the thing is, I was watching this and was like, you know, if you're going to do that joke, you really got to go for the gusto. I want to see that, like, that campfire go up like an atomic bomb, like a mushroom cloud. And it doesn't really. So I'm like, no. Come on, you know, at
maybe
least
that means that he, maybe that means that Christopher Lloyd farted for real and they wanted to keep him.
He's a method actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, you know, because that's the thing is, like, towards the end of the movie, like, after Dennis fucks up the flower show, and Mr. Wilson kind of, you know, says that, like, you know, I'd never want to see you again, Dennis goes off into the wilderness. He goes off into the, you know, Dennis the Menace has been chased from hearth and home, and he's going to go and live in the wilderness like Oedipus. And that's when Switchblade...
Even now, he sulks like Achilles in his tent!
And that's when Switchblade Sam catches him and is all like gonna use him for a hostage, and then we get like about half an hour of slapstick between Christopher Lloyd and Mason Gamble, and yeah. I think, and this is probably one of the most disappointing parts of the film, because I was thinking, like, come on, this is the part where somehow Mr. Wilson should come and rescue Dennis. You know?
Yeah, you thought that too. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, it was so disappointing because the ending, you know, Dennis triumphs over the bad guy himself and brings him home, trussed up like a turkey, and Mr. Wilson is just waiting on the porch. And I was like, no, Mr. Wilson, this was your time to be a hero. This is your time to prove that you know there was, you know, maybe the fatherly feelings aren't so dead in you. But no, we don't get that.
Yeah. I mean, they show him kind of looking for Dennis, and then, which, you know, is nice. I mean, we get to see Mr. Wilson's change of heart where he realizes that, like, he was, you know, he was too hard on Dennis, and, you know, Dennis is a kid and all that. But it would have been nice to, like you said, to have him kind of be the hero and, you know, save Dennis and, you know, again, show his fatherly feelings to show that he, you know, he would have been a good father. And they don't give us that because they want more slapstick. And it's like, this movie was kind of hamstrung, I feel like, yeah, by the need for Home Alone shenanigans. Because otherwise, you know, it would have been a lot stronger.
I mean, you couldn't have a Dennis the Menace movie without shenanigans, obviously. You don't want to just be Dennis the kid, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah.
Dennis should have been more menacing, but, you know, in fewer scenes.
I do feel like Dennis, like, when in the scenes where Dennis is just talking, it's way better. Because, like, when he's hanging out with Mr. Wilson and just being really annoying, like, it's like, okay, I understand why Mr. Wilson wouldn't want him around, and I feel like this is a lot more interesting, and also, you know, it's a lot better than the slapstick.
Dennis,
and especially
irritant.
Like, yeah, when he's just an irritant, and also like when he's talking to, like, you know, Joey and Margaret doing the clubhouse thing, it's like, okay, I can kind of see this works because he's kind of got a chance to be a, you know, a shitty little kid in that scene.
Yeah.
I do think the ending, though, I really like, you know, I really like how they did handle that. Mr. Wilson, when Dennis comes back, I was like, again, Walter Matthau, great performance here. He doesn't go, you know, the thing is, he's not a schmaltzy guy. And no. I think that's really what makes the performance work so well, is even when he's being sentimental, it never comes across as, you know, like Glurge or anything. He always feels like he said, he's, because I think when he talks to Martha, he's all like, I'm not good with feelings and emotions. There's a lot of stuff I'd rather not say.
Yeah.
And he always comes across as that's honest, you know, that's an honest thing. He's,
you know,
not a guy.
Little acknowledgement of how hamstrung his generation was by their particular flavor of, you know, toxic masculinity. You know, hold those feelings back, and it's, you know, and how much it hurts him. You know, not just everyone around him.
Yeah, I think Walter Matthau, yeah, does a great job of showing a guy who is not good at expressing feelings, but has, you know, feelings way deeper than you would think. And mm-hmm. I think, like, the few moments, like, at the end when he Dennis returns and he gives him a hug, it's like, wow, that scene really means something, you know? It really feels like he's got that, you know, he really has that kind of grandfatherly quality that comes across.
I feel like it could have been edited better, personally.
The whole movie?
I feel like... No, well, yeah, that too. But yeah, that specific scene where Dennis comes back, because, you know, thinking of it from a parent or guardian's perspective, when a kid runs away for a night and then just comes back as if nothing happened, you know, there's this immediate feeling of, where were you? You made us worry all night. And, you know, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
What should have been, he should have been like sort of, you know, kind of warming himself up to do it. And we should have had Dennis, you know, she's like, see, look, I caught the burglar and I got your coins back. And Mr. Wilson should have just been like, you know, who cares? And just hug Dennis right there. Like, you know, what's important is that you're safe.
Yeah, you're right. I do, that would have been, would have been better. I do feel in general this movie was edited strangely, you know?
You think so? Yeah, me too.
I mean, I don't know if it's the style at the time, but there's a weird way where it's edited where it does not flow very well. It feels like you're seeing random scenes, and intellectually you know that they kind of produce a story, but, like, they just feel very, like, disconnected.
Yeah.
You know, because we'll see a scene where suddenly it's like, oh, I guess Dennis's parents are at their work now. You know.
Ben Stein is there. He doesn't say anything.
Oh, yeah, that was so funny. See, I was like, that's Ben Stein. He was doing a lot of cameos during this time period. You know.
Yeah, boy. Christopher Lloyd, you robbed the wrong house. You could have gotten over $50,000 of my money.
Yeah, he was... I just feel like, Ben Stein was in, like, everything back then. You know?
I mean, John Hughes, Ferris Bueller, that was his star turn.
That's right. That's true. Thanks a lot, John Hughes, rehabilitating Nixon's speechwriter. What the fuck?
You made that stupid creationism in schools movie possible.
Oh man. I remember I saw that movie.
You did?
It is not good. Yes, 100 times better. The expelled, no intelligence allowed is actually like it is. Speaking as like, you know, a godless, left coast atheist, very funny because, but you know, it's also like very bad in the sense that like, you know, every dullard watched it was like, yeah, that's right. I think my favorite part of the whole movie, though, I'm sorry to derail onto Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. It's not a good movie. It's very much like you watch it and it's like, you know, they're like, oh, you know, this professor said that, like, God is real and they got fired. You should be mad about it. And it's like, well, first of all, if you research any of these things, it's like it always turns out that, like, they said God is real. And also they, like, you know, raped a co-ed. You always leave that bit out, Ben Stein. So, you know, there's always a little more to the story. The other funny thing is that they're like, he's like, oh, get mad about it. And this was made in like the 90s. So obviously everyone's like, who gives a shit? Oh, I'm supposed to be mad that some like academic ivory tower guy lost his job. Boo fucking who? I mean, if you released that movie now, of course people would lose their minds because they're primed to be mad about everything and to really, you know, especially hate professors. Because, you know, all those fucking commies. But, like, when it was released, it was just like, yeah, who gives a shit? But there's a great scene where Ben Stein is like, I decided to go to where atheism was born. Auschwitz. Or something. And it's like, and he's like, touring Auschwitz? Yeah, it's so weird. He's like, literally just touring Auschwitz and being like, did you know Hitler was an atheist? That's why he did this. And it was, Oh, well, Ben Stein apparently is spreading misinformation in documentary form. He also, but this is a, that is the scene is very strange because he's taking a tour of Auschwitz and asking like the tour guide is saying like, yeah, this is the room where, you know, Dr. Mengele did experiments on inmates or not inmates, you know, on prisoners. I don't know what the proper nomenclature is. And Ben Stein says, do you ever wonder if maybe the people getting the experiments done to them were the sane ones and the ones doing the experiments were the insane ones? And it's like,
what?
Yeah. And it's like, what? But the,
it was normally the other way around.
It was so weird. It was like, he just says that out of nowhere. And it's just like such a, like, I'm sorry, are you a child? What kind of question is that? And the tour guide is like, no, I think that it's actually like really tempting to think that the people who did this were insane, but we need to remember that they are sane. They were sane people. And, you know, that like, you know, the what do you call it? The banality of evil and all that, you know? And I was like, that's a pretty good answer. But I assume if you're a tour guide at Auschwitz, you get like, you know, idiot questions like that all the time. So I'm sure she had that one, you know, prepared ahead of time. I can only imagine, you know, having worked as a tour guide in a, I can only imagine the awful questions you get as an Auschwitz tour guide. Like,
I mean, my first thought was somebody asking, where's the basement?
I'm gonna bet they're like, so are the carpets here real? Are these the original carpets? I'm sure that, like, oh my god, I bet they get so many people just asking, so is it haunted? Are there ghosts? Tell me the ghost stories here, you know? God, because that's so tacky, but I 100% bet every American tourist that goes to Auschwitz is asking about ghost stories.
Yeah, a lot of people probably go to Auschwitz thinking it's like thinking it's like going to Salem.
Do you think, oh my god, how many, I don't know if it's been, it's probably happened where like those, you know, 3 a.m. ghost phone challenge, you know, like YouTube type guys going there. I'm sure that's gotta have happened.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, went to Auschwitz and I met Five Nights at Freddy's or something.
God, Jesus.
What a world. Anyway, on to less
heartbreaking things to think about. Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis the Menace. Not as bad as Auschwitz. Not nearly as bad as Auschwitz.
That's gotta be the best review it's ever had.
I mean, that is being really unfair because this movie is not that bad. I mean, it's not that good. It's just, you know, if I had to compare a movie to Auschwitz in terms of badness, which I understand it's extremely tacky, but yes, bear with me. If I were to compare a movie, it would not be Dennis the Menace because this is not nearly as bad. It's not nearly the worst movie I've ever seen.
It's better than Expelled. So, you know,
yes,
Expelled
is way better than
the
Expelled.
Auschwitz of movies than this.
Yeah, Expelled would be closer to the Auschwitz of movies than this. Way closer. So good that we didn't actually have... We didn't even hear Ben Stein say anything. He literally was there.
It was a silent walk-on. I'm guessing he had lines that they cut out.
Man. Yeah. That was kind of strange. But, you know, I will say the movie was well cast because everyone does kind of look like their comic strip counterparts. You know?
Oh, yeah. The guy who plays Dennis's dad. I mean, it's like they used whatever voodoo ritual they used to get olive oil off the comics page and turn her into Shelley Duvall.
Yeah. I actually thought it was funny. He does look a lot. He looks almost exactly like Dennis's father from the comic strip. Slightly less pointy, which actually to me when I was looking at him was like, oh, it's Pete Buttigieg. We also got, I think, Leah Thompson played the mom.
Yeah, Alice. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, is once again, it's a mom. She plays a mom, you know, so it's not a role that gives her a lot to do, but she definitely looks the part.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would start singing the Howard the Duck song over the end, but.
Oh, yeah. And also, like, it's interesting because this movie, I think, you know, they were trying to go for kind of a timeless feel.
Yeah. But it's kind of a, I think, would you call this a heightened reality?
Yeah, because they achieve, you know, it does feel kind of, you know, old-timey. It does feel a little 1950s, but at the same time, it doesn't feel so much of that I was like, oh, this is an old-timey movie. You know, if I'd seen this in the 90s, I wouldn't have felt like this is really, like, out of date. I know because they have, you know, they have phones, the parents work, you know, the cars look fairly modern. It's
But you never see a television. No one watches any TV in this.
That's true.
And definitely no computers. Now,
Mr. Wilson mentions being a child in the 20s, which gives you kind of an idea of when this movie is supposed to take place. Mm. I guess that would be, what is he, like maybe 60 or something?
Something like that. He's been growing this seed for about 40 years now. He's been living in this house for that long, and he was growing the seed for 40 years, and he was a postman for 40 years, but I don't know if those 40 years overlapped.
Okay. So if he was a kid in the 20s and he's in his like maybe like early 70s in this movie, so I feel like that would make it set it around maybe the early 90s, late 80s. So, you know, that's probably supposed to be contemporary with when it was released. But you know, it doesn't feel of any time, and you know, I think they did a good job with that, because I've definitely seen movies that do that better or worse. You know,
I mean, one thing that I like about this is that when everyone's looking for Dennis at the end, and the whole neighborhood is out there, and it's tons and tons of kids, and they're all Dennis's age, so. Like, 5 years ago, there was, like, some sort of, I don't know, Clomid leak in the town, and every single woman got pregnant at once.
The baby train, you know?
Yeah, watch out for the midnight baby train. Oh, but there is a train that goes through town. Maybe that was intentional.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Switchblade Sam is delivering the babies.
Stork Sam.
That's right. We do get a little discussion where Dennis is talking about where babies come from with his friends at one point.
That specific way that kids sort of try to make the enigma of where babies come from make sense with their limited knowledge.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's funny enough. You know, there's nothing, you know, it's very much like, oh, you just gotta like, what did it hang out until the ellipses appear or something?
Oh, but. two other famous people that appear in this. We mentioned the black cop. You probably know him better for his most indelible line, Darmak and Jalad at Tanagra.
Oh shit. I did not know that was him.
Yeah. Paul Winfield.
He looks different when he's not an alien.
Yeah. And this was just a couple of years later, I think. And the photographer, did you recognize that voice?
I didn't. I actually had to look him up, but
that's Arnold Stang. Real honey and crunchy nuts, your honey nut Cheerios.
So he's the bee.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Yeah. So he's so there are a few, you know, familiar faces. I thought
familiar voices, but one of them doesn't speak for whatever reason.
Yeah. I actually thought some of the best scene stealers in this were Polly the babysitter and her boyfriend Mickey.
That was funny.
Yeah. They're pretty good. They're very brief, but like Polly is basically this kind of gum-popping babysitter they hire, played by Natasha Leon, who is best known as Megan from But I'm a Cheerleader. And her boyfriend Mickey is kind of this, you know, this smiling kind of meathead who's constantly combing his hair. I like when he's reading the book to Dennis in the bathtub. Like, Polly kind of shanghais him into, like, being her, like, assistant babysitter. And he's all like, why are it's like train, and it's about a train growing up. And he's like, why do trains don't grow? Why are we telling lies to kids? And Dennis basically explains to him, like, basically the Terry Pratchett routine about how, like, you need to believe little lies so you can believe the big ones. And it's like, I mean, that was actually, like, this scene is actually pretty good. It's interesting because it shows Dennis is actually way smarter than you give him credit for in this rest of this film.
Yeah. Did you recognize him from Home Alone?
I was going to say, that's Buzz, isn't it?
Yeah. And he was, I didn't realize he was also the bully in Little Monsters.
Oh, shit. I guess he's kind of, you know, he was kind of born to play a bully.
Yeah. He's just got that, you know, he has that kind of wide meat face that really gets people is like, oh, yeah, that's a jock. That's a bully.
Yep.
Or both.
They have, you know, they're in it for a little bit, but some good performances. That's fun. Other than that, like, yeah.
And one of the neighbors is played by Jeannie Russell, who was the original Margaret on the 60s show.
Oh, okay. I guess a little Easter egg for the big Dennis heads in the audience.
And since 1978, she's been a chiropractor, but she came back to do this.
Oh, good for her. All in all, I thought that, like, this movie is, like, it's not bad. I mean, I won't recommend it just because this is not the sort of movie that I really enjoy, you know? I'm not really into these kind of, like, these loosely plotted early 90s, tie-in movies. I really think that, like, if they had cut out the final 30 minutes of Switchblade Sam shit, this would have been, like, a way better movie. In fact, they don't even need Switchblade Sam, honestly, in this film. I don't feel like he does anything.
No.
I'm
not sure what else you could have the ending be apart from Dennis, you know, getting lost and getting into real trouble and having Mr. Wilson, you know, having Mr. Wilson put on his, no, he should have, like, put on his postal service uniform one more time, ill-fitting as it was, and gone out to walk the streets. He's like, I've serviced this town for 40 years. I know every address. I know where. There's only so many places that Dennis could be, and I'm going to check all of them.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, you could have had him also, like, go to the clubhouse or the fort. And, like, I don't know, like, oh, no, it's not built up to code. It's going to collapse. Mr. Wilson, you better save him. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong. You know, again, Christopher Lloyd is fine. I think that Switchblade Sam having that character in doesn't ruin the movie or anything. But they, first of all, should have kind of integrated him more so that it really feels like, you know, him stealing Mr. Wilson's coins doesn't really feel like it. Doesn't really feel like that important at all.
No, not at all. I likened it to Problem Child earlier, and in Problem Child, it works a little better because the kid in that actually idealizes this escaped serial killer, and so he actually has to sort of make a moral decision whether he wants to be with the nice dad John Ritter or this criminal who will let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the thing is, like, it really feels like towards the end when they have this whole kind of, you know, kind of Ransom of Red Chief type situation going on with Switchblade Sam, like, suddenly Dennis has become so incredibly naive. He does not know the danger he's in. And it's just
gives him back his Switchblade.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. It's just weird watching because it's like, I really feel like at that point, Dennis is so, like, clueless, and it's like watching a dog try to make sense of things because you know, it's like, well, what is even going on at this point? Because Dennis is just completely forgotten about, like, that he's broken Mr. Wilson's heart, and he's just, you know, just doing these shenanigans when I feel like he should be really sad and Mr. Wilson should be more involved in rescuing him.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of I think it kind of, you know, so the movie, which feels like it's building to something that could be a lot better, instead just kind of fizzles. Though, again, Walter Matthau kind of brings it back at the very end. I like the part where they're saying, where his parents are like, oh, we'll have a daycare at work. And Mr. Wilson's like, no, he should stay at home. We'll watch him. It's all good. I think that was a really nice little, you know, yeah, a little thing to show his change of heart.
He had changed, that he was ready to, you know, give this dad thing one more try, you know.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that he would say, you know, I know how to handle kids. I'm prepared. And that would be a great time for Martha to be like, that's wonderful news, George. I'm pregnant.
Now, they do mention that the not having kids was out of both of their hands. So it is not really explained exactly what that means, if that, you know, means some sort of... I guess
George had a narrow urethra or something.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, you know, they don't really elaborate on it, but I do believe it is canonical that the Wilsons are child-free in the strip.
As opposed to childless.
Yes.
Well, maybe she's childless and he's child-free.
Yeah. I mean, I assume they don't have any grown children, or, you know, if so, it's never brought up.
One character that I like, that I wish we would see more of in the adaptions, is Dennis's actual grandfather, who is basically a larger Dennis and drives Mr. Wilson just as crazy as Dennis does.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen him.
Yeah, he's kind of, you know, kind of an older, a guy that Mr. Wilson's age, but he's sort of going through a second childhood, so.
Oh, wait, yeah, does he look like Mr. Wilson, but like with a white mustache?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay. I think I have seen him, so, you don't, yeah, that's true, you don't see him too much in the cartoon series, as I recall.
No. Yeah, they made three of these Dennis the Menace movies, did you know that?
I did not. You mean, like, after this one?
Yeah, I mean, there's this one, and then there's Dennis the Menace Strikes Back, which was made in, like, 97 or so, and they have, what's his name? Mr. Potato Head.
Don Rickles?
Don Rickles as Mr. Wilson.
And huh.
That's interesting, because Don Rickles, well, I mean, he kind of made his money on actually being a racist comic, so that's a totally different take on Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, I would definitely, okay, so I guess looking at the, looking at the Wikipedia page for the Dennis the Menace Strikes Back, it looks like we also get Betty White as Martha in that one.
Oh, okay.
And Dennis's grandfather does appear in it.
Oh, okay, cool. Hey, yeah,
played by George Kennedy, who's in lots of stuff, but mostly I know him from Naked Gun. It looks like... There's two crooked con men trying to take advantage of Mr. Wilson, played by Brian Doyle Murray and Carrot Top. Yeah,
Carrot Top.
I feel like we should check out Dennis the Menace Strikes Back at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Not to leave you on a cliffhanger, but we are now already enthusiastic for Dennis the Menace Strikes Back. I hope it's not just. I'm sure it'll be disappointing, because how can it live up to that? But
yeah.
and Gina's in it. Oh, okay.
A third Dennis the Menace movie called Dennis the Menace Christmas, which came out in 2007. So clearly must have an entirely new cast as well.
Yeah. Dennis never ages, but the rest of the cast does. That's scary. Yeah.
Well, you know, he's like some sort of tulpa or something, I guess.
Oh, if Dennis is actually Mr. Wilson's Hobbs, that would change everything.
Yeah. Well, I always remember when Dennis was eating, Sunday Funny cereal, and Mr. Wilson is like, "I see."
You asked for it. Oh man, I want a movie of that where Dennis invites the entire comics page into Mr. Wilson's house. Especially if it could be made at the same time, and you'd have all these, you know, 90s era celebrities in the roles of the comics characters. Like, you'd have, I don't know, Christina Ricci as Luann.
Oh, man. That would be, you know, it'd basically be the, what is it, the Marvel Universe of its time.
Yes. Mr. Wilson, I don't feel so good.
Well, I guess so. What do we think of Dennis the Menace?
He's a menace.